Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet radio land, although this really isn't radio. It's a podcast, and it's a podcast within a network, and it's a network that I've used for a number of years, and I really enjoy it, and I every morning get up, part of my pandemic ritual is I check all my statistics, and so I check listenership, I check my app, my new ministry app, how many people have downloaded it, how many people have accessed things on the app, and then I go and have some other metrics that I look at. It doesn't make my day one way or the other, if it's up or if it's down. It's just something I pay attention to, that God may want to speak to me out of those statistics. He may not. But at any rate, it's good to be back with you again today. And we have a repeat guest, Dr. Regis Wanyika, who was here on the show live a week ago. And in our archives, you can go back and find his name. And last week, we talked about his purpose journey, and we made a right turn into higher education. Today, we're going to take a left turn, and we're going to go the ministry route, because he has a parallel universe, and you can't separate, really, you can't separate the two. They are part of who he is, both the higher education and the ministry, and we will talk about that today, because he is the general superintendent of the Faith Community Churches International, and you're going to hear all about that and his journey in there. And I've had the privilege of meeting many of the fine ministers of the gospel and servants of the Lord in FCCI, and so we want to hear a little bit more about that. And I was just got word that today we may be doing a virtual conference for FCCI, so we may have a chance to talk about that as well. Thursday, and that's the day that we are recording this broadcast, it's my day to go out and check the P.O. box for contribution checks that were sent, take those to the bank, and do shopping. It's Thursday somehow. Dr. Reg was asking me earlier today, why is Thursday? I don't know. It just emerged. It's kind of the start of our shopping week. And really, we've just been going out once a week. And the rest of the time, we're working at home. And obviously, there's no place to go, but the days have been so busy and gone by so quickly. I'm contacted by many people about publishing, also many people just talking about purpose or life direction, or just some of the stresses that they or their families are going through in the pandemic. So I was on the phone a lot today after I came home from running all my errands. And the drawback to that is, you know, when you're writing a book, you can kind of, you know, do it a page or two at a time. But when you're editing, you got to do it a little more aggressively. You need little bigger chunks of time. And so I need a big weekend, let's just say that. I got to catch up on a lot of projects. But already I have two phone calls to Uganda on Saturday morning, because it'll be Saturday afternoon there, interviewing them for a book project. And then I have another book project, two interviews in the afternoon. So that means Sunday and Memorial Day on Monday. So those are days I really need to maximize. And I have a ministry board meeting next Friday that I have to do some final financial statement preparation, agenda preparation, and get ready for that. So believe me, I'm not complaining, because I created this world, and I love it, and I love the work that God has given me to do. And when we say have our main meal in the day, we pray a blessing over the food and the work that God has given us to do, both of us, my wife and I. So at any rate, I trust you are well. And tomorrow's show, I am not going to have a guest. I'm going to start a series. I'm going to shorten the broadcast for a week or so and just talk about purpose and make the interviews a little more streamlined, not so much interviews, but my talks to get my basic purpose message into this network, into this archive of Blog Talk Radio that I've been using. So we're going to be starting that tomorrow and won't have a broadcast on Monday. And then I think I'm going to do 3 broadcasts next week and then do an interview. So every week, we'll, for the next couple of weeks, we will have a purpose interview, and then you will hear from me on a little shorter version talking about some aspect of the purpose message that many would say I am best known for. Let's go on into our, as is our custom, to read Psalm 91 as we start the show. Tomorrow morning I will do a Facebook Live, and I will do the same thing there. And I think we've reached the end of our translations. I think after 7 weeks, we have finally exhausted all the various versions and translations of Psalm 91 that I could find. So we are going to revert back to one that we read, four or five weeks ago. It is the New Living Translation, the NLT. And so let's go ahead and read Psalm 91 out of that particular translation. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust him. For he will rescue you from every trap and protect you from deadly disease. He will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. Do not be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. Though 1,000 fall at your side, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. Just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. If you make the Lord your refuge, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you, no plague will come near your home, for he will order his angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up with their hands so that you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. You will trample upon lions and cobras, you will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet. The Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. So there we are, Psalm 91. And again, in our revised format over the next couple of weeks, I'm probably going to not read Psalm 91. We will read something else. I'm also still toying with the idea of just doing some shows every now and then, just reading an epistle or just reading a portion of Jeremiah or some of the Psalms, just reading Scripture. But that's for a discussion for another day and another time. Let me go ahead and bring my guest on for today. It's spinning. There we go. Dr. Reggie Swanyika, welcome back to Wake Up to Purpose.
Well, welcome, and to all the readers, and thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I was just thinking as I was reading, you've and we're talking about radio and such, you've been doing a lot more video lately. Talk to us about some of the series and things that you're doing, and give us some feedback on how it's going, because I've been watching it on LinkedIn, and it's pretty good stuff. Talk to us about that.
Thank you. So, you know, when the pandemic came, and I realized a lot of people are going to be at home, and of course, here with the work I do for the university, I wanted to kind of stay in touch with all the students and everybody else at home so that they have something to watch and be encouraged. And I wanted to send out a positive message. So I started doing a series that I call Brave Bite. So this is series 2. So we've had the first series and the second series. And, for example, the one this week is on altitude-altering attitudes, which just means your attitude will help you rise. And then previous week we talked about all growth is preceded by change. And so every week I just want to bring an encouraging message, but just provoke people's thinking and get them thinking differently and take mm-hmm. advantage of this time that we're in where I don't know what you want to call it, whether you want to call it social hibernation. We will come out of it. And when we come out of it, hopefully none of us are going to be the same or none of us are picking up where we left off. Hopefully when we come out of this, we are better people. We are people who are more self-aware. We are people who have made some life-altering decisions and people who have embedded into their routines and into their lives and some ideas that can future-proof their lives and so that if anything like this ever happens again, we are better prepared. And also, we are setting our, you know, if our lives were going in the wrong direction, this is an opportunity to press that reset button and so that you come out of this and you feel like you've reset and you're going forward. So that's really what I'm trying to do, send out a positive message to everyone. And it is based on Christian principles, but I do it for a broader audience.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also saw some video about Pentecost, didn't I? Is this another stream of video that you're doing?
So there's what I just talked about is Brave Bite. And then every Sunday now, I put out what I call Sunday Thoughts with Dr. Reg. Currently, right now, I'm doing a four-part series on the power, purpose, and personal significance of Pentecost. And so we've done the first two. So I've done the intro, just gave a little bit of introduction on the whole notion of Pentecost, where it came from, and the Old Testament and New Testament, and how it was a fulfillment of Old Testament and contemporary prophecies. And then this past week, I talked about the power. What's the power of Pentecost? The power of Pentecost is the Holy Spirit. And then this Sunday, then we are going to be talking about the purpose of Pentecost. There was a purpose to Pentecost. And most people just think Pentecost is something that differentiates one denomination from another. And most people just think it's all about speaking in tongues or about, and they focus on the wrong thing. Well, there was a purpose to why Pentecost had to happen the way it is. And Jesus himself defined it and promised it, and we got to see it. And in the book of Acts, we got to see Pentecost in action, and we continue to see it in action today. So we're going to be talking about that this coming week, and then the following week, which will be Pentecost Sunday, then we'll talk about the personal significance. So we'll be answering the so what question. And what does that mean for me? What does that mean for you? What does that mean for the school teacher standing in front of a classroom? What does that mean for the mechanic changing your oil at Fast Lube? What does that mean? What does that mean for the flight attendant? What does that mean for the fire chief? It means something. It's very significant. It's a very inclusive event, and we'll be talking about that.
Yeah. Now, as I alluded to in when we opened the show, your life really has two tracks. We talked about one of the tracks last week, which was higher education, and the first video series you referenced pertains to that world of higher education. The second track for you seems to be ministry, and this Pentecost series would seem to be related to that. Let's go back. We didn't talk a lot about you growing up in Zimbabwe, and just talk to us a little bit about your life and what led you to that second track that I'm going to go ahead and call the ministry track for purposes of our discussion.
I mentioned a little bit about how I grew up, and it was difficult circumstances, but I grew up in a Catholic family. My father was a catechist for the Catholic priests and was also an interpreter. He taught himself how to speak Chichewa, which is the language that is spoken in Malawi, because we lived amongst Malawian immigrants. So we were one of the few Shona families in a township called Rugaris back in the 70s. And so my father would be the interpreter for the Chichewa, or that in those days they called it Nyanja, the Nyanja service. And so I got to watch my father just serve the Catholic priest. And, of course, I have about 10 years of Catholic education, spent 10 years in Catholic institutions. So when I was about 16 and a half, I contemplated becoming a Catholic priest. Very few people knew about that except the rector of the college that I was at. And I even got to attend one retreat where you explore the priesthood as a vocation. Really what that was, it was a search for significance. It was a search for purpose. It was a search for trying to live a life that represented more than just my existence. And also, John, it was also that I admired how these German nuns had left their nice countries to come to Africa and to serve us and to be missionaries. You know, how these Irish priests had come all the way to Africa and were serving. And I became attracted to a life of service. But at that time, I cannot say I know Jesus as my personal Lord. I was taught about Jesus. I knew about the Bible, did not know that much of the content of the Bible except the stories that were in the liturgy. My first year in college at the University of Zimbabwe, that's when, you know, I first encountered on a personal level the message of the gospel. And if you permit me to tell you the story, so one Wednesday morning, I'm getting ready to go to a physics lecture, which was a general education class with 400 students in it, and I was not born again at this time, but a young lady named Maureen came and prophesied in my face and pointed a finger in my face and said, "God is calling you into the ministry." Well, what does that mean? You know, I didn't know what that meant. So after the physics lecture, I went to the Students Union building with all my friends, and we're sitting around the table and we're having, you know, we're consuming alcohol with our lunch. And all of a sudden, that same young lady came up the stairs and headed for our table. And all of a sudden, and she was known for being an evangelist, right? And all of a sudden, all my friends got up and say, "Uh-oh, here she comes." And before I know it, she was sitting at the table. I was just sitting by ourselves. And she looked at me. She said, "Did Jesus send me to tell you, you are so near and yet so far?" Mm. I mean, John, I had no idea what she was talking about. But you know what? Months later, coming from a funeral, I just had this urge within me that, you know, and this emptiness that there was something more to life than what I was currently experiencing. So then I went to the labs at the University of Zimbabwe Medical School, and I looked for one of our tutors who was another woman who taught microbiology. And I say to her, "Hey, listen, this Sunday I'd like to visit your church." And then she looked at me and she said, "Well, praise the Lord." And that's when she held my hand and didn't let go and started leading me into this professor's office and barged the door, and there was the man sitting down, and it's a man you and I know, it's Langton Gutsy. And it was a Thursday morning in July of 1991. And she looked at him and said, "Professor Gutsy, this is the Regis we prayed for on Tuesday afternoon. I think he's ready to receive Jesus." Now, you got to realize, nobody had talked to me about Jesus in a month or 3 months or 4 months. I'm just having this quest, and I just bump into her and I ask her this question. And little did I know that at the Hospital Christian Fellowship, they had this habit of putting people's names on a board and then praying them to come to the Lord Jesus. But between that prayer and me walking in on Thursday, nobody had talked to me. And all of a sudden, I'm the very person walking in saying, you know, "I want to receive Jesus." And I knelt down. I received the Lord as my personal Savior. And I knew God had called me into the ministry. And when my head was up, I looked him in the face and I said, "God has just called me into the ministry." Mm. That's how the journey began for me.
Yeah. What year are we talking?
1991.
Okay. Great. So now, what happens after that? You're in university, and you've surrendered your life to the Lord. Where do we go from there?
Yeah. So I'm in university, and I'm in a very good and rewarding program, making more money than a qualified nurse as a student who has not graduated. Everything's going well, but I feel the call into the ministry. And one of the things I knew is I needed to go to Bible college, but I didn't know anyone. Went and talked to my pastor. My pastor said, you always finish what you started. So I stuck around, and when I graduated, because I had been a cadet, that's why I was getting paid money, and I had to go work for a rural hospital. So I was sent to Marondera Provincial Hospital out there in the middle of nowhere. I think I spent a year out there in the middle of nowhere. And finally, I made my way back to the capital city, took my first higher education job at the University of Zimbabwe in 1993, and then I started going to Bible school. And I started working as a volunteer youth pastor for Bishop Tudor Bismarck. And so I did that maybe for 2 years while I was going to Bible college. And then 2 years later, I left and went to, then it was called Rhema Church, and they had the Bible college that I was attending. And by the time I graduated, I was a volunteer youth pastor. And by the time you and I met in 1995, that's when I was praying about a transition. About a year later, I left my job as a medical sales executive and became a full-time youth director. And then later associate zone pastor, and then served the ministry for about 5 years until I moved to the United States in 2000. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was it like being in ministry then? I mean, you were a youth pastor, and what were some of the dynamics?
Well, John, so you got to realize, first of all, one of the interesting things was, It was probably at the time the largest multiracial church right in the heart of the capital city. And here I am, the first, and this is in the heart of Africa, the first African youth pastor for the church. So that was a lot of fun, just learning how to do cross-cultural ministry. And it was not easy the first time, because I'll never forget the first time I took over. We had maybe about 70 students in our youth group, and out of that 70 students, maybe only 20% were of African descent. And just as soon as they announced that I was a youth pastor, a majority of the kids who were of non-African descent walked out and left. But you know what happened? Then God grew. We dwindled down to maybe 39, and from there we went up all the way to 200. And it was like God gave us a fresh start, and I'm so grateful that my senior pastor at the time was supported us and knew what was happening. And it was tough, but then it became sweet. And some of the most memorable times that I've had in my life happened during those times, because some of those young men and young women are now businessmen. You met one of them when we were in South Africa, who's now a successful businessman. He was in my youth group. And some are pastors of churches in Europe and in South Africa, in Kenya, and occasionally, you know, like the videos you mentioned about on LinkedIn, they watch those, and they send me emails all the time. They are now family men. And so it's very fulfilling. It just God blessed me with an opportunity to create some memories that will live for me for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Regis Wanyika, second time around. We talked to him last week. This time we're talking about his ministry track in his life. So, Dr. Reg, you come to the United States in 2000. Am I mistaken, or didn't you come with the intent of studying ministry?
It was, and yes, that was my intention. I wanted to come and study ministry, and because at the time, I thought I would study ministry, maybe eventually go back and start a world mission center and start training missionaries to send from Africa to other parts of the world. So because, you know, I was still exploring my purpose and what it is, mm-hmm. and I knew my purpose had something to do with training individuals. And so at the time, I assumed that it was just to train missionaries, and so that's why I thought, well, let me start a mission center. But while I was there, I realized that in order to do so, it wasn't theology that I needed to focus on first, but it was actually learning how to train people. For those who were listening last week, if you remember, in 1995, God spoke to me and gave me then what my purpose statement, which was bringing them in, raising and training them to bring others in. So I knew there was an aspect in my life that involved training other people. So I thought, well, I need to learn how to train other people. And so that's why I started studying education, took a lot of theology classes as electives. And while I was doing my master's degree, I thought, well, let me do two of them. So I started taking classes in practical theology. And but then, you know, I ended up finishing a doctorate. And then at that point, my mission in life and my vision and my purpose became even clearer. And two things, John, come to mind. And I talk about this. First realization was through a quote from Archimedes. Archimedes was that Greek scientist, but he came from a place called Syracuse in Italy. I think lived in the 200 or 300 BCs. But he said a statement that I have said so many times. Archimedes said, "Give me a pole long enough, a place to stand and a fulcrum, and I will move the world." So the whole idea is to imagine somebody standing in space, and you can see the globe, and you give him a long pole, you give him a fulcrum and a steady place to stand, and with that pole, they can turn the world. So the vision that I had was that God, through the education that I was getting, was giving me that long pole. But what I needed was the vantage point, was the post to stand that was stable enough, and the fulcrum. And that's when, one, I realized that I was called to stay in the United States, because that would give me a steady post and a place to stand. Mm-hmm. God had already mm-hmm. given me the long pole, and from this vantage point, I can turn the world. That's why to this day, my ministry is global. That's why I think about the world. I think about the many nations, because God has given me a long pole from which to continue to turn the world. So that's the first thing. That's one of the, you know, images that came to me as I prayed about my future. And I mentioned last week about Luke 2:52. And I have talked and preached and taught from this passage. In Luke 2:52, Jesus grew in wisdom, and Jesus grew in wisdom, stature, and in favor with God and man. And here was our Lord Jesus, the Messiah, God incarnate. Through him, all things were created. He was in the beginning. He was before all things. And yet, he comes into this world as a child, and grew in wisdom, grew in stature, and grew in favor with God and man. So I was able to explore this concept for me as a theoretical framework or a conceptual framework for my life and for my ministry, that Jesus growing in wisdom represented competence. He had to grow in his competence to be a Messiah. He was an all-knowing God, but he had to grow in competence. In stature, he had to grow in his capacity. His capacity to handle the office of being the Messiah and of being the rabbi of rabbis. And in favor with God and in favor with men, his horizontal relationship and his vertical relationship, that was capital. Social capital and spiritual capital. So that's when I devised the three C's: competence, capacity, and capital. At that point, I knew that I had to deal with the first C, which was competence. That's why I studied a degree in education, because my life had to do with training other people. So those were two very pivotal experiences that I had in my life that helped shape who I am and my ministry outlook and what I do and what I do not do.
Yeah. What was those? Competence?
Capacity and capital. And so favor with God is spiritual capital, and a favor with man is social capital. And Jesus grew in all three of those. And so that's the call upon us, upon every individual who follows the Lord. You know, you might have a gift, you might have a calling, you still have to grow in that gift and in that. You don't sit on it and just say, well, I'm gifted. No, you have to grow in it. And you have to grow in your capacity to handle that gift and to handle whatever the audience is to whom that gift has been given to, you know, you've been given that gift for a purpose, or the people who are supposed to receive the message you have. And, of course, your relationship with God has to continue to be deep. And you have to know that everything is about people, is about other people. You were created to act and improve and add value to the lives of other people.
Yeah. Now, when you came in 2000, you thought you were going to identify with a ministry base that was here in my home city in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
But that didn't work out, and you're at Oral Roberts University, and suddenly, again, another turn, another twist, and you connect with some folks that you're still with today. Tell us about those early connection days and how all that happened.
So you know how I used to come to Pittsburgh all the time, and I thought, well, you know, I found a home. And, you know, you go through a time where you feel like a spiritual orphan. You're looking for friendships. You are looking for accountability partners. You're just looking for, I hate to use the word covering, but you're just looking for a place to belong, a place you can call home. And that didn't happen for me then. But then God enabled me to cross paths with a gentleman named Carl Conley. And at that time, you know, he didn't wince at all. It was kind of like Jesus telling the disciples, follow me. And that's all he did. And I started following him. And at that time, he was with another organization called Faith Christian Fellowship. And then he left in 2003. We gathered in his home before he left Tulsa. And at that time, we conceived the idea of a global ministry called Faith Community Churches International. So it was four families that gathered in that home. It was Frank and his wife, Carl and his wife, Jerry Lillard, who was an RU student, and his wife, and Bungie and I. And so we gathered, we prayed, and we said, from here we will touch the rest of the world. A year later, we had our first camp meeting in Tucson, Arizona. And then from then, we have grown, and we're not a denomination, but we're a fellowship of leaders who are united in purpose to encourage each other and to uplift each other, to uplift our and uplift our communities. And right now we are connected with leaders in 56 different countries.
Wow. But there was something unique. I mean, Dr. Conley was I think involved with the group, but some need wasn't being met. And so what was the genesis? What was the motivation for the beginning of this FCCI?
So quite a few things. So a lot of the ministries here in the United States and a lot of the churches, unless they are very intentional and very purposeful about reaching other parts of the world and knowing how to reach those parts of the world and how to minister to people from other parts of the world, the people from parts of the world just fall through the cracks. They just became a statistic. They became a notch on their belt. They just became one more bragging point. Hey, we got so many people in Africa. We got so many people in Latin America. And so there, we would have camp meetings, and first thing I picked up on was these people were just sitting by themselves, not able to connect with anybody, and nobody was making an extra effort to reach out to them and make them feel wanted, make them feel welcome. So while I was with the organization, that was the first thing that attracted me to it, so I started reaching out to them. And at that time, Carl was the international director. He was in charge of the international office. And we would go up to his hotel room and just sit and pray and just talk about our lives and just get together as international brothers and sisters. But still, there was a hunger. There was a thirst. The other thing, too, was there was a need for someone to reach those churches that most of us tend to ignore. A lot of these big ministries, when they go to Africa, they don't go to a rural community. They go to a big urban church, and it's televised, and everybody's happy, or you fill a stadium. But nobody goes to that rural community with the quality programs and a good message to those people who don't speak English, those people who can never pay for your microphone, those people who can never afford to even pay for your meal, but yet they are ministering effectively in their community. They might even have a seventh grade education, and they're out there in the middle of nowhere. There's no electricity, no running water, but they are ministering effectively to their people, pastoring and looking after the people, but they don't have access to education because in most cases there's a requirement for them to learn English, and if all you have is a seventh grade education, you are automatically left behind because you don't know how to speak English. A lot of the materials are in English,
mm-hmm.
And yet they're going to spend the rest of their lives ministering and living in communities where people do not even speak a word of English. So I saw that need, and I thought, a lot of people are being left behind. So as we launched FCCI, we made sure we wanted to be that organization, that fellowship that reaches those type of people. And so those type of people will know that they're wanted, that there's a ministry, there's a place out there where we can belong, and there's a place out there that treats us on equal footing, with the T.D. Jakes, with the big ministries. And that's the flavor, and that's the ethos of FCCI.
And when you first got involved, were you a preacher? Were you a teacher? Were you doing a lot of public ministry? What were you doing in the early days?
I was the gopher. I go for this, I go for that. And that was the second time in my life that has happened. I was just a driver. So this is how I got to meet the internationals, because I was the guy that picked them up from the airport, dropped them off at the hotel, go back to the airport, pick them up, drop them off at the hotel, go to the airport, pick them up, drop them off at the hotel. Then I'll come back to the hotel, and I just find them where I drop them off. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, shouldn't you be with other people? Because I was the youngest amongst me. No, they didn't know anybody, and nobody had reached out to them. And Carl cannot spread himself thin enough. And that's what happened. And when I started FCCI, that was my job. I picked people up from the airport. I drove, you know. That didn't bother me at all about whether I preach or whether I'm known by anybody. I was just happy to belong. I was happy to have found a home. And from then, you know, the rest is history. You know, I just climbed up the ladder till now, where I'm the superintendent.
And this position or this transfer of to be the superintendent took place when and where?
Oh, a year ago in July at our annual camp. Well, we call it FCCI, and we were in South Africa when that happened, and I think the whole organization had been prepared, and we sort of knew, and that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. Now, that was the year 2019. Left to come to the United States in 2000.
In 2000,
so,
yes.
So 2019, was that the first time you were back on the continent?
No. First time
I
was.
Oh, you were
back
in Malawi, right. You had been in Malawi, right. Mm.
No. The first time was in Nigeria.
Okay,
In 2016. That was the first time I went to Africa,
right.
And so it had been 16 years since I had done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's tell our listeners a little bit more about this Faith Community Churches International. Again, what what's it look like? And it seems like these camp meetings or these conferences play a very significant role. Just talk to us about how this FCCI expresses its service and connects in fellowship with its churches.
Yeah. So really, it's actually about leaders connecting. So unlike, you know, denomination, they establish churches, and they have churches that bear their name. For us, we connect people. And so Christian leaders, and we help with training, and we hope that they in turn connect with each other. So it is a fellowship of leaders, and those leaders lead churches. Their churches are not a member of the organization. They are the ones who are members of the organization. Mm. And they come to get encouragement. They come to fellowship. And we hope they encourage others as they get encouraged. And we try to provide training. And we do that in several ways. We have regional conferences where, like, say, we'll have one in Dallas. We fly to Dallas on a Saturday. And we spend a whole day just providing training on either church leadership, management, and just giving people the basic tools, what I call good churchmanship, and the basic tools on how to be a leader. And so we do that through these regional conferences. We also go from church to church like other people. And then we have, every other year, we have our global convocation, which we call the FCCI Family Conference. And this is now we invite everyone, and we've had some in the United States, you know, mainly in Tucson, and then Salem, in Roanoke, Virginia. Then we've had one in Oklahoma City, and we've had one in Nigeria many, many years ago. We had one in Malawi, and then we've had one in South Africa, and we just try to spread them globally. And the organization is the spiritual leadership is through elders, and we have elders in different regions of the world. So we have an elder in India, we have an elder in Malaysia, we have an elder in Nigeria, an elder in South Africa, an elder in Malawi, an elder in the Philippines, here in the United States, in Spain, and in Australia. I think those are all the elders that we have, and we try to coordinate all our events through these elders who are over certain regions. Pretty much that's sort of what we do. So we're not a denomination. We're just a fellowship of leaders. And then, of course, we do our best to support certain causes financially. For example, just in the last 2-3 months, when certain parts of the world were hit hard, and because of the lockdown, you know, those rural pastors, they have no food. They can't access certain basic commodities. So we send money, and we try to orchestrate that, you know, they access supplies to food or medicines. And so we do that, based on our ability to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's, in a nutshell, that's kind of what we do. And but most of the time, we want to focus on training and developing people. Because transformation is the key. You know, the whole saying that, you know, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish, you know, you feed him for a lifetime. So we just believe that our primary concern is not to try and change a situation. Our primary concern is to change people. Changed people can change their situation. So that's what we focus on. We focus on providing transformational experiences and training to individuals, and we know that those individuals who understand their context better can then go back to their communities and transform those communities.
Yeah. An important piece of the conference last July was ordination, and I was skeptical when I first heard, because this is a worldwide organization that's very loosely knit. It is one of influence. There's no dues. Yep. There's, and yet the ordination was the highlight of the conference for me. Talk about your philosophy in that area and why it appears to be working so well.
Yeah. So we don't recruit. We don't ask anybody to join. people who feel like they have found a home or people who are looking for a home, do approach us, and we work through the elders. So the elders are the ones who are responsible for coordinating and interviewing and verifying the call upon those people who want to be ordained, and then we conduct the ordination, and we work with the regional elder and the local pastor, and then we ordain. In South Africa, we ordain 55 individuals.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa. By now, I think if you had managed to go to the conference, had we not shut it down because of the COVID pandemic, you would have met almost 200 pastors that were ready to gather. So the group, since July, has grown from that original 55 ordained pastors to now 200. And that's how we grow. We grow organically. We grow slow but solid. We grow amongst those people who identify with our ethos. We're not big timers, and we don't big time anybody. We just want people who are genuine, authentic, who enjoy being trained, and whose heart is to minister to other people and add value to other human beings. That's who we're attracted to, and that's who we tend to attract.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Reggie Swinyika in his role as the superintendent of the Faith Community Churches International. And Dr. Reg, there wouldn't be an FCCI if it wasn't for Dr. Carl Conley. Talk just for a few minutes about him and what made him so unique and different, and his influence and his ministry philosophy, that is, his fingerprints are all over FCCI. Talk to us about him.
Goodness. So he is FCCI. He started it. It was started in his heart. An unusual man. So he grew up. He's you know, as missionaries amongst the Native American reservations in New Mexico. So he grew up in the reservations. Here he is, a Caucasian kid, and I think that helped shape his worldview, which was multicultural, and I think it gave him the tremendous and exceptional cross-cultural competence that he exudes. And I think from then onwards, that's, you know, the rest was history. And some of the things that make him unique is his heart is oriented towards other people. His heart is oriented towards helping other people, and his heart is oriented towards uplifting other people and developing other people to be leaders. He had no intention of being the head of anything. He takes pleasure in creating leaders out of other people. Like, for example, he is now the executive vice president, and I'm now his boss. But, you know, he's 80 years old, and here I'm 50 years old, and he's the founder and the spiritual father of the organization, an unusual man. He has what you and I would call spiritual sons in almost 56 to countries of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So all these churches that we talk about in Spain are people that call him that call him and see him as their spiritual father, which I do too, by the way. And so that's we follow that model. He's the one that led the way and taught us that we need to think about others, and that our lives have to represent more than just our mere existence, and that we want to move from success to significance. And you reach significance when you start focusing on adding value to other individuals.
Yeah. Yesterday I had my friend Bill Hobbs on from West Palm Beach, president of Urban Youth Impact. And the last week I had the now director and president of the ministry. Bill turned it over to him. I saw that transition last year, and then I saw the one from Carl to you, and they were two highlights for me, because so often it's not done well, if it's done at all, and that is it being succession from one generation to another. What made this work so well? What made this transition so smooth?
Yeah. Well, I got to be honest with you. Dr. Carl Conley made it work so well, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
From the get-go, his intention was always, let's do this, and let's give this a fresh pair of legs. A fresh pair of legs. And So I was appointed elder in 2009 is when I was appointed an elder, and I had no region, so they called me the roaming elder and stationed here in the United States. And then in 2014, I was appointed the vice president of the organization. From the get-go, he had been looking for a successor, and everybody prayed about it, and all the elders decided that I was the right person to do this. And they then, you know, named me the successor, and he wanted to make sure that the transition takes place while he's alive, while he's well, so that the way we do it, we just switched roles. He went to the number two, I became number one, and we continue to work together. And that's one of the things that made it well. We were intentional, and we had a succession plan that we had communicated to everyone, and everyone knew who was heir apparent. Everybody knew, I think we both have the same philosophy of ministry, which is to serve others. So there'd be no conflict. There's no major difference or departure from the course that we've been on since the founding.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you hearing? You mentioned and alluded to some of the rural pastors, you know, having a difficult time. What are you hearing from the elders or going on?
Well, so you know, in Vanuatu, which is an island off on the east coast of Australia, towards the, you know, in the direction away of Tasmania. You know, so they had a hurricane and it affected a lot of things. It was not so much the COVID-19, but the weather-related disasters, and which wiped out homes and everything. So we were able to send supplies there, and I got the nicest note from them. And then from Brother G. Thomas in Tenali in Andhra Pradesh, India. Of course, he looks after orphans. I think he ministers to almost 400 orphans per day. And because of the shutdown, it was difficult to access anything, to access any help. And so we went ahead and reached out to them, and we were able to send some help to them. And again, you know, they sent pictures, and they're so thankful. We were concerned about our brothers in Italy. You know, we have leaders in Verona, Italy. And then we also have leaders in Spain. As you know, those were the hotbeds for COVID-19 in about January. But believe it or not, you know, by God's grace, we didn't lose any of our leaders to this disease. Everybody is well. And nobody got sick for lack of a better word, our people, so to speak. So God has been grateful. God has been graceful towards us. In Malawi, we had the shutdown, and then there was a little bit of political turmoil with the Supreme Court having nullified the elections, and so there were demonstrations which brought the city to a standstill. So that compounded the misery for those who are vulnerable, those who are in the rural areas. So we were able to send food and supplies, and the pictures are just, you know, they warm your heart, but what's happening is heartbreaking. And so I keep getting all these reports, and of course with Brother Salinza from South Africa, we talked, and he was in self-isolation, and but continued just to try and reach out to others and just coordinate efforts to help those who are in need and communicate with us here in the United States about the needs. So they do. And today I just got a letter from Nigeria, from Gospel Light Church, with Dr. Felix, and just reaching out to me, just letting me know he's doing okay, and that everybody's doing okay. So we're getting good reports, you know, despite the misery that this pandemic has caused. But somehow God has preserved some people, and for that we're truly grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. We've just got about 3 minutes or so. I mean, it's hard to say now, I guess. What's the future hold for FCC? What are you, in light of all the upheaval and the turmoil and the uncertainty, what are your hopes, dreams, aspirations for the future?
Our hopes and dreams are, I obviously do not do that full time. So right now I'm, for lack of a better word, I am operating like the symbolic head of the organization. And obviously it's to train leadership. I mean, it's to train, hopefully that through our efforts, God would raise those who will take over and run it more effectively and do this on a full-time basis. That's one thing that I have on my plate and in my heart to make sure that happens. I see us growing in Latin America and reaching out and making new friends and connecting with more leaders in Latin America. That world is wide open. And then some of the periphery parts of nations, like Micronesia. You think about it. Oh, by the way, outside of Vanuatu is an island called Pentecost Island. It was just devastated. It's those communities that people don't normally pay attention to. Someone needs to go. Someone needs to be sent. Someone needs to appear there and encourage them. Someone needs to provide training for those pastors. And so that's kind of what I see doing and elevating the role of the eldership so that they're in a place where they can reproduce what they see from you and me, and their profile increases, their ministry increases. They understand their context better than you and I, but we want to empower them so they can do what we know they can do better, and they can do it better than we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have a couple of interviews with Dr. Carl ready, to be a part of a book and to tell the FCCI story, because it really is a story that needs to be told and will encourage many people. On the page for the for FCCI, it is. On the show page for this particular broadcast, we have the show description, and in pink, you can click on it and get to the website that we are redoing for FCCI. But it'll give you some basic information, and we invite any leaders of churches who are looking for a place to identify to certainly consider FCCI.
Yeah, it's not a denomination, it's a fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
You come, we have something to help you with as far as training and leadership training, but we expect you to bring something to the table because you have something to give. You have experiences, mm-hmm. you have knowledge that other people can benefit from. So, that's the interaction, that's the level of interaction that we encourage.
Yeah, and you do a great job, and I think the best is yet to come. So, Dr. Reggio, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for the dual barrel presentation and explaining these two tracks of your life, and not very many people could keep it all balanced like you do, and we appreciate the job that you're doing.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, and I want to thank all the listeners, and my prayers is that as they continue to search for purpose, that they would find it, that they would be uplifted, and that they will grasp their calling and just focus on it and never let go.
Indeed. Thank you. God bless you. Have a good holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You too. Thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. All right, Dr. Regis Wanyika, Superintendent of Faith Community Churches International, also the President of Ottawa University Midwest Region. We have an interview from a week ago that talks about his track with higher education. This show, we talked about his track in ministry. And I learned a lot. I didn't know some of the early history, so that was very interesting. Again, tomorrow I'll be doing a solo show, so hope you can join me then. And in the United States, Monday is a bank, as they say in the UK, is a bank holiday. It's a national holiday, Memorial Day. And so I won't be doing a show then. Then I will do some next week where I'll be teaching, and then I will have somebody as a guest on Friday, and we'll probably follow the same format for the following week. So this is John Stanker, your host for Wake Up to Purpose, signing off. And until we're together again, I want you to be about your work of purpose, and I'll be back tomorrow to help you along the way. Until then, so long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.